И те там не армовиста, стави там я на бутале, хваям рупа когда маям, когда ты сапранти там, намам Вишну брая, Вишна бустая бутале, симате бхакти винанта свамине нити намине, намасте сарасвати деве гарбхани сачарине. Невесец сундивари паскачари сатхарине. Ванчакат батаруб дасча крипа синду бхевача. Атита нам бхабе вьо вайшнаве вьо нмо намаха. Джай Сри Кришна те танья прабо нитянанда. Хидрета граха сивасари го хактаминдам. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare Hare. Sarvabhargi. So, I'd like to ask you a few questions. It's different from last night now. Last night we asked questions and set the devotees up a little bit. But just for a genuine philosophical ponderance, we understand that there's different types of disciples, and there's different types of gurus. And we understand that there is various aspects of rendering devotional service. We have devotional service, but there is kama mishra bhakti. Bhakti is contaminated by kama, by lust, by fruitive activities. We have jnana mishra bhakti. Bhakti is there, but it's contaminated by jnana, pursuits for knowledge, mental speculation, conjecture, etc. We have also yoga mishra bhakti. Bhakti is there, but it is mixed by too much interest in psychic phenomena, too much interest in metaphysics, too much interest in trying to connect with the Shakti rather than the Shakti mom. And so we understand that mishra is there, this bhakti, but is contaminated. We're trying, of course, to become Suta Bhaktas, whereas bhakti is pure, unadulterated, unmotivated. And so we constantly are trying to engage in Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smar. We're trying to stimulate all the senses to reclaim the pure bhakti. So we know that Shaktur Vidha Bhajante Mam Jnana Sukutino Arjuna. We know Shaktur are four types of people, surrender. And they come with different baggage. And so while they're associating, they bring their baggage from the past. They bring what is happening in the present, is going on. And according to their aspirations, they are bringing something also to them. So we see that based on this mishra and based on the four types of reasons why people come, we have different types of disciples. Because of certain amount of sukriti or jnana sukriti, credits in the past, along with what is going on and how the bhakti lata bija is being watered, or how the weeds are being watered along with the creeper. So I want to ask you to share with me your understanding of the four different types of devotees. Four, let us say not devotees, because that's a different category. Four different types of disciples. We'll abbreviate it because we have short time tonight. Four different types of disciples. What is a first-class disciple? If we do not know these things, we will not understand what we're trying to become. We don't know what is first-class. We don't know what is first-class sadhu, we'll not become first-class sadhus. We do not understand what is first-class guru, we'll not honor first-class guru. We do not understand the importance of shastra, then we will not embrace it sufficiently, follow it, and become it. So often, we want to constantly educate or re-educate ourselves so that we're clear in what we are becoming so we can become that. So let me hear from some of you. What is a first-class disciple? You've entered into a discipleship. Luckily, all of you, most of you are initiated. So I want you to think, what exactly is a first-class disciple? We don't know where we're going, of course, any road will do. If we don't know what we're trying to attain, then we can often connect with so many things because we're not so sure what it is that we really want. If we don't know what a diamond is, what gold is, then we can get some cut glass. Because after all, if we don't know the difference, then it won't make so much of a difference to us because we don't really understand the value anyway. So what exactly is the first disorder? You want to tell us the
one that knows the mind of the guru and offers service before he even tells the disciple what to do.
So Yasoda says first class disciple is one who knows the mind of the spiritual master and is able to do what he wants even without being told, reminded, instructed, etc. Yes, that is first-class disciple. Now that's different from speculating about what the spiritual master wants, doing your own thing. It means having done so often what Guru wants you to do that now you understand what is to be done, what is the mood of the Guru, what is the mission of the Guru, without being instructed. Not a matter of speculating, not a matter of conjecture. It's not a matter of you doing something that you want and considering it that I understand the mind of the Guru. It's a matter of not having necessarily to be a mystic to read the mind of the Guru, but seeing, hearing, following with such intensity that now you are hearing the Guru's words always in your mind, in your ears, in your consciousness. You're visualizing what the spiritual master does, how he does it, why he does it, when he does it. And you're connecting that in such a way that it becomes such a part of you that it becomes rather spontaneous for you to carry out, to do various activities even before being told. That is first class disciple. What is second class disciple?
Disciple is one who is told by the spiritual master to carry out a specific order and does so gladly, like I just performed a second class devotee action by closing the window and happily doing it, but I'm not a second class devotee. I'm actually the fourth class, I'm sure somebody else can.
Yes, I see we have some, must be some pretty sharp people. We don't have to delay on these things. Yes. That is a second-class disciple. Second-class disciple is told what is to be done and gives his or her all in trying to carry out that particular duty. Does it with their life and soul. They've been given some instructions, and now they carry that instruction out full-fledged. It is totally a total absorption, become their life and soul. They know what is to be done now. And so they take it as their service to Guru, to Sadhu, etc. What is a third class disciple?
He does his service, but he does it. The spiritual master tells him what to do, but when he does it begrudgingly.
So the third class disciple is one who hears what is to be done. He has some faith, but he does it with offense. He does it with grudge. It's amazing. Nobody's getting anything wrong here. You're spoiling the fun. Now I got to learn how to become a good guru. I get all of these devotees who are hitting these points. So, third class has faith, but weak faith. Shraddha is weak. It's like guru says, bring me water. And the third class devotee says, but it is hard to find. Maybe when I get it, it'll be contaminated anyway, and you won't want it. Maybe when I go out and get the water, I'll get a pneumonia and get flu, and then I won't be able to serve you later. Maybe someone who's first class has already know what you want and they're bringing it already. So, third class devotee, he has interest, but he finds so many reasons not to do what is necessary. Now, what is fourth class? No, none of you ever think about fourth class, so it doesn't even register to your consciousness, right? What is fourth class? Someone?
That's me. He understands the orders of the spiritual master and doesn't pay him any attention.
Yes. That is fourth class. Fourth class, here's what is to be done. Actually understands somewhat what is necessary because he's heard it. And just doesn't give a damn. He or she actually heard. And they're thinking, yeah, all right. Do the opposite. They literally vigorously avoid following, even though they have committed themselves to discipleship. Now, fourth class devotees, we feel that they should be rejected. I'm speaking personally now. I'm not making any policy for ISKCON, for Vaishnavas. But those who we find are being fourth class, who take initiation, they know what is to be done, they've made their vows, they've been instructed, but they choose to go on and on deviating. Now, such devotees, we want to reject them. Not that a mother or father ever really rejects their son or daughter. But sometimes their son or daughter has become so deviant that they want to make sure that the son or daughter understands that what they're doing is so painful for the parent to have to see, to know that their son or daughter doing that, that they rather have the pain of not being around, not being connected with that person. Father says, mother says, that's no daughter of mine. Which means that that's the degree that they're paining, but they are not ready to accommodate the activities of such devious daughter, such a devious son. Because ultimately, we all have to be accountable to Srila Prabhupada. And if we are being proper disciples, we're being proper gurus, then we have a responsibility, because also the guru is supposedly one of the best disciples. Guru is his guru to the degree that he is a first class disciple. And then we're not, he gradates also. You're not able to properly understand the mind of guru. He's not able to hear instructions and follow it. But if he is finding ways to get around it or avoiding it, then he is also classified. And so if he is thinking so much about what his guru wants, then he must keep trying to offer that, even without having to be reminded again and again. Now, one of the reasons we have for some years been rejecting fourth class disciples is because we want to create more and more community. And so sometimes the father makes it clear that one of the children is a deviant so that the other children will hop in and will try to see how to help that particular brother or sister who is in such difficulty. So sometimes it's like sending a message that one of your brothers or sisters is in serious difficulty, serious trouble, or your niece or your nephew or whatever is in serious trouble, help them. Not a matter of just singling someone out, embarrass them, make them more of an operati, but it's a matter of trying to send a message so that such persons can be helped. So there will be times when we are gathered, and I will even announce some disciples that we're no longer having responsibilities for. We're already doing that indirectly, or we're doing it sometimes on an individual basis of letting some devotees know that you have rejected me and therefore we are accepting your rejection at this time. Because where someone has made promise, made pledges, and they keep going against it, it means they have in themselves, they have said, I do not want to accept your authority, your lead, your guidance. And so they have severed the connection themselves. So sometimes we want to help them to understand that they do not have insurance, because there are times when people can have an event in their life and they think they have insurance, and then they're even more bewildered because they were thinking that it was there and it wasn't. The other reason is that as we realize that Maya is stronger and stronger, then we have to become stronger in our devotional life. And to be stronger, it is based on individual and collective devotional service to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada's mission is as strong as each devotee, each guru, each project is that is under his particular general jurisdiction. And so each person becomes an important factor for the success or for the failure. And you've heard me from time to time say, when a spiritual master accommodates on and on deviation, then it means there's something poor about that particular spiritual mentor's consciousness that such person is going to keep offering that to his guru. Because he's not supposed to be taking it, so he can't have an artificial humility of accepting that and taking on the burden himself, because he's supposed to be offering that to his guru. And so if he's ready to offer nonsense to his guru, then it means there's something nonsense about that particular person's consciousness, that he's comfortable in offering some nonsense to the one who's supposed to be his most beloved, the one he's supposed to be giving his life to. So we won't choose this arena to do such, because that's not the reason for this discussion. Just to remind us in general, what is first, what is second, what is third, what is fourth, so that we can look a little closer at our own lives and see how to become first class. And understand that when someone is in difficulty, someone who is a Vaishnava, it doesn't mean just your god brother or god sister, doesn't even mean just somebody who is a part of our ISKCON society, but someone, or even someone who is a part of Vaishnavism. We see that someone who is an aspiring spiritualist is in difficulty, then we have a duty to try to guide them, try to help. We are to be like Vaishnav Brahmanas. And so therefore, we are to be able to be known as the well-wishers of anyone who particularly is trying to be pious. The Goswamis were not just preaching only to the sophisticated sadhus. They were not only there for the advanced Vaishnavas, although they were themselves most advanced, but they were making themselves available to the royal as well as to the ruffian class. And they were respected by such because they were such carriers of bhakti, not tolerating the nonsense, but so eager to try to reach out and to help anyone who is available, accessible to be helped. At the same time, they're having intense scholarly discussions on what is tattva, what is siddhanta. So when we see around us that someone is struggling, then consider that you may later be struggling yourself and you want help. Or consider somebody dealing with their particular challenge and task, how by helping them you can help yourself, you can grow like anything as you try to facilitate someone else. And believe it or not, it is the way Mother Lita, wake up Mother Lita, I know you probably drove a long ways, but try to stay well. So as we help someone else, we will distinctly help ourselves. As a matter of fact, it is the major way to help yourself. It is the major way to grow in your spiritual life by trying to become more equipped, more serious, so that you can be used more as a puppet for Krishna. One of the differences between the fourth class and the first class is that the first class devotee has made him or herself so much more available to be used, and so therefore without even Guru doing or saying something, they are be able to understand because they are now being more graced by the presence of the super soul that is spiritualizing their intelligence. Because it's all happening by Krishna. So where the first class devotee is humbled him or herself to the point that Krishna is coming through more and more. Krishna is in the heart of Guru, which is in the heart of the devotee, so Krishna is coming through. So what we're really talking about is that the first class devotee is gradually throwing out the false ego, throwing out the bodily conception. And the first class devotee is gradually becoming the original Sroop, in terms of the first class devotee is gradually connecting more and more with their own soul quality. And so it means soon that they will literally drop all of the excess baggage. And so they're understanding the mind. And we see the most, one of the most highest expressions of this as we look at some of the wonderful leelas of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, of their special servants. What to say of the activities of Smrta Radharani and the Gopis of Raj. So we see that Krishna will do it, give us insight of what is to be done. So don't be fourth class. Don't be third class. You find yourself third class where so much of your discussions, letters, conversations with Guru is giving excuses about why you didn't do, why you did something else, why someone else should do, then realize you are hanging in heavily in third class. And as you hear an instruction and you weigh it, because we're not just guru tattva. As you weigh it based on shastra, because ultimately guru is supposed to be the major carrier and reminder of the living example of the shastra. And so as we see through the eyes of the shastra, and then we, with zeal and enthusiasm, avidity, we carry out, follow the order of Guru. Now, what is a way of looking at different types of Vaishnava Gurus? There are different classifications of Vaishnava Gurus. I gave one simplistic way of also four ways you examine a disciple. You can also do that with Guru, because Guru is supposed to be a disciple. But looking at Guruship, the different ways how you can do this, but what are three ways of looking at different types of spiritual masters? What is the first class spiritual master? We know the general category of Uttama and Majjhama and Nisipanishtha, but we want to look at another way of looking at particularly about Vaishnava Gurus, because we can look at Majjhama and Uttama and Kanishtha in terms of any sadhu, any devotee. But we're talking about those who are Vaishnava Gurus, who are in the alignment of trying to rescue souls. What are the three classifications or three ways of evaluating such? Right now you have some idea? Okay. Well, yes and no. I mean, you definitely can tell something about a guru by the kind of people that he's generally used to collecting. But you'll find that any guru, even the Lord, for instance, we see that even in Lord Chaitanya's association, you know, there was the Ramachandra Puris, and there was the Krishna, Kala Krishna, etc. He was associating with the Lord, and he wasn't, you know, having such always pure persons around them. But we see sometimes the pure devotees, Nityananda, the great souls, Vishnu Tavas, Advaita Acharya, they had some sons that went personal, had some sons when Abhiram offered obeisances, they didn't have the potency to remain alive. So that's interesting, but it's not what we're looking at now. I mean, first we look at first class, what we consider to be a first class deliverer who's come into this world, who's taking on the role of guruship.
I remember one, I don't remember the details, but there was one tape where you used the terms 2 feet in, 2 feet out.
Yes, I was thinking more on this line, that we understand very first class spiritual master has nothing to do with this world. It's a Nitya Siddha who's taking on the service of coming in to the world, has only consideration about the spiritual kingdom, comes on mission, takes on some basic humanness, but it really has nothing to do with this material world. So that kind of guru, Nitya, that is Jagadguru, that is the kind of a being that comes into this world, does what they have to do, there's no question of fall down, no question of such contamination, because they are not conditioned beings. And so they are Nitya, they are eternally liberated entities. And so they come and they give the most amazing benediction. At the same time, one can create the most heavy offenses toward such beings, because they are distinctly, we have to close our teeth, they are distinctly representing Krishna, because they are puppets of Krishna. So this is, so this is first class. So when we think of, like our Srila Prabhupada, and we say Jagat Guru, we think of Srila Prabhupada, and we, and as he explained how there was never a time when he was not thinking of the Lord, not doing what he was doing when he was coming with us, in the sense of always putting Krishna first. So this is not an ordinary category, because we're talking about a founder acharya. We're talking about someone who is on a mission of trying to spread a message to give benediction to the whole planet. So such persons are obviously quite rare. They're like those who practically start, who help purport sampradayas, like Ramanujacharya and Madhavacharya, etc. So, this person is like someone, and Sridharmas explains this kind of nicely, there's a couple of references, but I think he does it one of the nicest ways. That is like one who has 2 feet in the spiritual world. And so they've come from the spiritual world, they're connected, their eyesight is there, etc. And they're bringing others back according to their surrender. The second type of guru is, yes. So this second class is someone who is not eternally liberated, but they have followed the process of sadhana bhakti. Kripa is there, mercy is always still there, in case, but they have followed. And so they have become liberated. Now, this class is also somewhat complex, because a sadhana siddha is also at different stages of acceleration according to when one contacts that particular being. Once that being has become totally liberated, totally pure, there's also no question of falling down. But sometimes that being is pure almost. So it's like having one foot in the spiritual world and one foot in the material. One foot on that side of the door, one foot on this side, and so they're going out, but they still have to take the other foot out, and they're calling people who are connected with them, and they're going out, and they're calling people, but they also have to make sure that they move the other feet and go out themselves. Because we see that some cases, like who? But were some cases of those who were practically on the state of prema, but had some deviation. Bart Maharaj is one. And you know any others? Viva Mangala Thakura? Any others? Think of any others? Shoda Haridas Dharma Jewis. Vittavasura could be considered. Also, I was thinking of Rupa Kaviraj. There's some cases like that where they're just about prema. They're already in the deeper stages of bhav, experiencing literally symptoms of love of God through the process of sadhana. But in most cases, because of some deviation, some offense, like in the case of Rupa Kaviraj, he made offense to a pure devotee, and therefore he lost so much of his amazing credit and good association that he had, and he became an embarrassment. So this is the class where one knows, has the duty, has the service to do what is necessary. It's pointing, guiding, but at the same time has to finish up, go on with those last layers, last aspects, to be able to have 2 feet in the spiritual kingdom. That type of being normally doesn't fall but can fall. That type of being normally doesn't, but if does, usually has enough credits that will be reclaimed. Now, you can understand what is the third type of guru. All these are bona fide gurus, bona fide. You know, there's some who are saying now that guru is only the first type of guru. No, there are different types. And they're bona fide, but they are different levels of consciousness. It's not that the guru has to be the big acharya, and that is all. Although, if one is not connected with purity, there is great, great risk. And so therefore there must be first class disciple, and there must be first class guru, or disciple must be working up to be first class, and guru must be working to become first class. Otherwise there's a cheating business going on both sides. So you can understand then what is third class. So what is the third class in this situation?
Pure platform, because they're told to sell that to their spiritual master who is on the pure platform. They have the potency to be able to deliver, show the way how to get out of this material.
Yes, the third class kripa, basically, being given chance for guruship, has some serious intention to serve, has 2 feet on this side, understands what is the goal, pointing toward the goal, speaking about the goal, but has 2 feet on this side and has to work like hell to get on that other side while trying to bring others. That case especially has got to be extremely careful about the guru-disciple relationship, because they will not have so much power to take on so much deviation. Even the second or the first class will not want to offer deviation to their particular guru. And that's why normally we see that most times we've seen gurus did not take so many disciples. We've seen many very empowered gurus only took a handful of disciples. But some will take tens of thousands also. And some will take no disciples. Won't have anything to do with discipleship. So now that we understand, it's a little late, so I'm not going to go into all that I was going to go into. But we have different ways of looking at what is the proper, what is a first-class disciple. So we want to try to become first-class. And we have different ways of understanding something more about spiritual mentorship. And why sometimes some people who are seemingly quite advanced, or rather, actually genuinely advanced, and have deviations. Why a Rupa Kavi Rush? Why a Bart Marash? Why someone who has had so many credits, and even maybe on the level of experiencing some bhav, but there's not some ongoing working on oneself, humility, keeping a goal in mind, or looking at what one is trying to acquire, and being careful about what one is pulling, there will be a problem. Now, the disciple is to look through the eyes of the Shastra, but basically the etiquette that the disciple is to be in the mindset that my guru is having 2 feet in the spiritual world. Now, why should the disciple have that kind of mentality? Well, disciples should try to look through the eyes of the Shastra and accept a guru who they feel that can take them back to Godhead. If you don't feel that way, don't take him in the first place. But once you have made that commitment, then you're supposed to have that mentality, unless you see through the eyes of the Shastra and with Sadhu that guru has become a nonsense. And then the duty is to pray for that guru's rectification, back away, and see what happens. If your faith is not sufficient to hold on to that person, to drop them fast and to get some shelter somewhere. But always be appreciative of whatever help you did get. So it's just like in leadership in general. The people make the leader and the leader makes the people. The quality of disciple also impinges upon the spiritual master's consciousness and can offer the spiritual master shakti, power, and love, devotion. The dedication of the disciple can enhance the dedication of the guru to be a better disciple to his guru. Now, I'll take the converse of that. If one is surrounded with those who are dysfunctional, hero worshippers, who are followers instead of trying to become leaders, then what will happen is that will affect the mind of the guru, and the guru will start thinking like the scattered energy that's around him, will start thinking like the Mishra that's there, and will begin to imbibe so much Mishra Bhakti rather than entering to the platform of Sudha Bhakti. And this is one of the reasons that we try to be very sweet with you, and we also are very harsh, well, I'm not so harsh, but very poignant on so many points. Because it is our duty to offer the best of Śrīla Prabhupāda, it is our duty to keep working on our own character while trying to encourage you to work on your care. And that is our last point I want to share with you. Now, some of us, we have not seen each other for some time. In a few cases, it's been almost a year. In some cases, it's been a few hours, unfortunately. I had to look at you again. But you should ask yourself, and I should ask myself, since the last time we saw each other, can we honestly say that we have made advancement? I should be able to tell you that since the last time that you saw me, that I have made advancement. Since the last time we were together, I should be able to be accountable to you that I have made more spiritual advancement so that I can be more accessible to guide you and to serve you. Also, you should be able to say to me that since the last time that we saw each other, that you have made more advancement. From reading Prabhupada's books, from associating with devotees, from the letters that I've written you, from the books of mine you read, from the lectures, you should be able to say that you have made more advancement since the time we last saw each other. the next time that we see each other, whether it's tomorrow or next week, some of you here or in Washington or next place I go, or next time that we come together, you should be able to feel that I have taken this discipleship so serious in my life that it is my priority, that I am a Vaishnava. I am one who has been marked with the permission, or who has been given a ticket, that I can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Now I must come closer and closer to being able to deposit that ticket for my passage. I've been given this ticket now, and now when I see my general, the conductor, let him know I am this much closer for our passage. If you cannot say that, then you have been a cheater. If you cannot say that, then all the blood that Prabhupada spilled and time that he spent in trying to give himself to this planet, primarily to his society, that you are literally minimizing. Prabhupada coming on this boat at this late age, heart attacks, struggling in an environment that was totally hostile to what he was trying to give, and spending his last moments where he was not eating, sleeping, mating, what to say of defending, wasn't even able to move, wasn't even able to go to the restroom by himself, wasn't even able to wash himself, but at the same time, he was speaking the Bhagavatam for us. When we deviate, we're saying, we don't care about that. We don't care about what our great God, granddaddy has done for us. We don't care that he has opened up a door that would normally be quite closed, that we can have a chance to pass through, even though we're in this hellish Kali Yuga. We're saying that, I'm emphasizing, Bhaktisiddhanta, emphasizing that one who becomes Uttamadhikari can liberate 100 generations. One who's a Majjhim, second class, can be able to elevate 14 generations. One who's Kanishtha, 7. So we are saying that our desire for our own sense gratification is so impending upon us that we don't care about those relatives who are connected with us biologically. We don't care about those persons who socially come across us who we could be able to give some benediction to. We don't care about what our guru has to suffer for our sins. We don't care about what we add or distract to our own immediate spiritual family. We don't care. We want that particular sense gratification. This is the message that we're sending out. So if you want to do like that, you do on and on, why should we accept you on and on to render that kind of mentality to the environment? It's non-different than being in a family. They steal from your mother or daddy, and they take their things, and they beat them up to take more, and you just look at them and think, that is okay. You have a duty to, at least, if you can help, at least to try to see how to stop your brother or your sister from coming into your family's house and stealing from your mother or father, harassing them. And so if we can't help the character, at least you stop them from causing more damage to themselves as well as to others. Because the more that they do sinful things, the more they do damage to themselves. It's a very serious movement that we have involved ourselves in. And so it has this tremendous sweetness, because it's all about the eternal romance. All of this that we're doing is all ultimately about eternal, blissful, enduring romance. We are just preparing ourselves for eternally being raptured in love. And so we're ready to pay some little price so that we can eternally be raptured in divine love. So whatever little sacrifice we have to make in this lifetime, it's worth it for what we can eternally become. But it won't happen. We're too selfish. So if we're too selfish, we actually deserve to be helped by Maya. See, Krishna is so kind, Guru is so kind, they're always going to help us. It's just a matter of how they help us. They're going to help us by the embrace, or they're going to help us by the kick, by the swat. And it's up to us which way we want to receive the help. But once we have said yes, and we said in that fire yajna, we're saying, I want to be helped. Now it's up to the caretakers. How are they going to help me? It is up, basically, under the direction of the spiritual master. And if he's connected, then how he is connected and how it's coming through. So some of you, you've been getting whooped like anything internally because of your deviation. And some of you, almost weekly, you're dreaming about Guru, you're dreaming about spiritual life, and you wake up enthused and energized. That's very, very few. But the opportunities are there. I don't personally feel that since Prabhupada has been gone on this planet for so many years, I don't feel farther away from him. The opposite. Each year I'm thinking more and more about the commitment, the responsibility, and feeling more and more that I want to be your puppet, because otherwise be in big trouble. And so it becomes exciting. And just thinking that on our own, what can we do? But when we're backed up, we can raise hell. Huh? If we are properly backed up, we have no reason to fear anything. Because what the Lord can do, what He can use us for, is the constant miracle. And we want to live a life that's miracles unfolding. Why not? The opportunity is there. We want to experience it and catch up with it. And that is why we keep reminding us, we want to create an enchanting environment. But it starts with ourselves. So wherever you are in your services, whether you're living in a temple or you're living home, create an enchanting environment. If you can't do it in your temple, do it in your home. Make sure that what you are really about when you walk into your house, that you are just so much refreshed. When you walk into your room, that you are so much refreshed about what your responsibilities are in re-spiritualizing this planet. We are trying to get you ready so that in your lifetime, when this planet becomes infiltrated or inundated with all kinds of unusual presence, that you will be of caliber. Not only will you know about it and be ready for it, but you'll be ready to facilitate a major shift on this planet. Why not? Some entities will have to do this. Why not yourself? Lord Chaitanya's mission does not just appear every single moment, every single day, just depending on the day of Vermont, but we see it is rare. This planet, Bhumi, can only take so much. All of these earthquakes and famines that are increasing every single year, thousands of people, these are just warning signals. All these people who are going mad all over the planet, all these millions of people who are dying from AIDS and heart disease and from cancer, it's sending out a tremendous signal
that we're in a very unusual time. We can become a part of so much of the garbage that's being collected. Or we can be a part of the cleansing aspect. And it's based on the decisions that we are making now. So we are really not interested in just trying to facilitate some people who need to have an autocratic authority to help them to know when to go to the bathroom, when to shower, when to eat, when to sleep, when to read, when to rise, when to go to bed. We're interested in people who understand that actually we are all eternal beings who have the right to participate in the eternal romance. But we have chosen to minimize that to a certain extent. And now we realize we just have to reclaim our divinity. I want to see a time in the near future when people come here and when they go to sleep, they wake up tremendously refreshed because of the beings that they have associated with while they were asleep. Our physical body sometimes may interfere. But at least when you sleep, you have the experience. And the next state is when you walk around on this property, you come into this temple, that you realize that this place is being occupied by highly evolved spiritual beings who are watching us. And we don't want to disappoint them. This Gita Nagari property is full of empowered entities. And some of them are right here, right now, while we're speaking. And they are watching and waiting. And they know that Prabhupada was on his way here to do that other 50% of his work. And so it is the desire of the Nitya Siddha, the Jagat Guru, that certain things take place. You think we're doing all of this fuddy-duddy, psychological stuff, spiritual, social, spiritual stuff, just because we are just wanting to do some kind of unusual exercises? Do you understand what that 50% entailed? It entailed trying to practicalize Krishna consciousness so that it could be accessible for more and more people to imbibe, and those who have it to value it more and more. I wouldn't be in this property, in this country right now, practically, for more than a few hours if I was not sent here. I was sent to this particular project. I had no desire to come here. I'm being very straightforward right now. I think those who are not visible will allow me to say this. And so I am here because I am supposed to be here. And I will leave my body here developing this project where it becomes a door to the spiritual world. So we want your help to do that. Whatever I say on this on tape. And I'm ready to back up whatever I have to say. That we want this to be a certain type of chakra, that it will be a door to the spiritual world. Bhumi is an entity. Just as of our bodies, we have doors. Nose, eyes, ears, mouth. So there is environment for transmission, coming and going. So if you understand that, you understand a little better why we are giving you these four principles of community building. Of being in the Kali Yuga, but not really being of Kali Yuga. Are we putting so much emphasis on trying to facilitate conflict resolution? So much emphasis on trying to facilitate communications? So much emphasis now on trying to focus you more on the deity? So much emphasis and trying to help you not to get too much into the mind shifts that many of you are experiencing. Do you realize how sad some of you are going to be when you leave the body and later you realize what opportunity that was upon you and you didn't fulfill it? Just like many of your parents, many of our parents are going to be shocked when they leave the body. They will realize what you were as a Hare Krishna devotee, what that really meant to them. Many of them will be extremely disappointed that they did not support, understand what you were. But they will be extremely grateful of what you did because they will experience benefits from them. Similarly, some of you who have stepped are going to be extremely disappointed to understand what opportunities you have. Just as many of us now are extremely disappointed, now Prabhupada has come and he has gone, and we're extremely disappointed, and many of us just live in history and history. It was like this in the old days. And Prabhupada said, yes, and what is Prabhupada saying now? So we don't want to have that mentality of realizing that we missed an opportunity. But so many of us now, if we had another chance to be with Prabhupada, we would have asked this and did that. But we had the chance. We didn't take advantage of it. So some of you who choose to hang on to your own self-centered desires, that by the time you leave this body, you're going to be in that mindset of what opportunities that you had, you did not take advantage of. But let's at least try to minimize the number of people who will have to think in that particular way. Each of you do your part. You try to minimize things. Now, I was going to have questions and answers, but I'd rather you to go to bed with what you have heard, so you can try to imbibe a little more to strengthen your devotional creep. I don't know when I have to have questions and answers. I really wanted mainly to have questions and answers. Just like what I said now, everything I said, I was thinking to say in about 5 minutes. I had the book to read to do some other things. But I was being internally inspired to speak differently. And so after I sat down here and joined that kirtan, the second kirtan, and sat back, then I tried to say something different. So then our message then tonight is about consideration of first-class disciple. We want to be first-class disciple as guru, first-class disciple for his guru, first-class guru. We want to be first-class disciple, first-class spiritual team for Srila Prabhupada's mission. Then how beautiful it is. As we have success, as we have struggles, how beautiful it is as we keep the goal in mind and realizing that whatever we may have to endure or what we ultimately can acquire, that it's fully worth it. So we want to see everyone back for the morning program, for Mangalo Arti. Except those who may have small kids, we understand you may have more trouble being able to come. Other than that, we expect everyone. We were sending out a message yesterday. We want each of the temples to get a tape for the temple. But we're stressing how important it is now to really to take the early morning chanting and the regulation more serious. And I gave you a little clue of that yesterday with the heavy sort of input. But part of that was mainly trying to prepare you for being more ready for acceleration. So we take this much more serious of the basic things that Prabhupada has given us, really embracing those so that we will not allow the Maya influences to keep on bringing us into this duality. We should stop having these too much of this influence where we are one day feeling Krishna conscious and then 6 days we're out of it. We go 1 month and being out of it, and 1 or 2 days we feel a little inspired. Some of us have gotten so out of it that we're basically just in a steady lower ebb. It doesn't have to be that way. But if we minimize the things that can protect us, then we will have this problem. And we're emphasizing how all over the movement that people are minimizing the most important hours of the day. They're minimizing getting the protection from the Parampara by not doing some of those basic things that gives us that protection. Some of those things is being able to capitalize off those special hours and chanting where we're literally crying out for Krishna, quality chanting. And the best way we can do that is doing it in the morning hours. So if you listen to that tape, then you can evaluate yourself better in terms of your first, second, third class, or the fourth class. whether you just find so many reasons to give excuses or to literally avoid what is being asked by your founder Acharya, by our founder Acharya, rather, by our Parampara system, and by your immediate spiritual master. And if you, as we said, prefer to rest at fourth class, then in order to create the kind of door, and we're saying here is a catalyst, because if we can do this sufficiently, it will affect all of your places. See, normally in Vedic system, guru would have like a seat, meaning that they would have a certain major place of mouth, major place where the message is going out to disciples wherever they may be, or the message is going out to the world wherever the environment may entail. So we have been brought here, this particular Dham, as a way of amplifying the message. And so you will see that more and more in the coming years. ISKCON Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Siddha Prabhupada Ki, C.C. Radha Damodar Radha Saimasundi Ki, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Ki, Gorni.